are meant to call from out of the past. Stories, strange and weird.
Tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre.
Stories of the supernatural, the supernormal, dramatized by fact, the mystery, the unknown. We tell you this frankly. So if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these madmen, play, we urge you, calmly, seriously, to turn off your radio now.
Welcome back to the horror. Thanks for joining me once again. We'll have a visit with the old hermit today. We'll hear from The Hermit's Cave, a series that aired over CBS stations from September of 1936 to May of 1947. The episode we'll hear today is from February 6th, 1944. Here's The Crimson Hand from The Hermit's Cave.
The Carter Coal Company and the dealers of Olga Coal present
The Mummers in the Little Theater of the Air.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I saw a movie the other night that applied both to Olga Kohl and to you. It had to do with the American shipbuilding program. One of the workers looked right out at the audience from the screen and explained that these new vessels aren't being built only in the shipyards, but everywhere in the country. The parts and materials come from practically every state in the Union. He went on to say that nowadays the coal mines aren't just digging coal, they're digging ships. In other words, coal is a basic war material, which explains why you might not always be able to get as much of that good Olga coal as you've been accustomed to, as quickly as you've been accustomed to getting it. But I know you'll be patient, and I know you'll cooperate when you realize the reason for any delays or shortages that may occur. The reason is that coal is helping to win the war. Besides, Olga coal is so good that it's worth waiting for. Remember, when you have Olga, you have one of the smokeless coals, which means that it's clean burning. You can have a comfortable home with less furnace tending than usual, because this coal holds its fire so long. And you find it possible to keep fuel bills down because of Olga's extra heat content. I'll tell you at the end of the program how to find your Olga, spelled O-L-G-A, dealer, and he'll tell you the rest of the story. And now, suppose we let the hermit tell his.
Stories. Weird stories. And murders, too. The hermit knows of them all. Turn out your lights. Turn them out. Have you heard the story of the Crimson Hand? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story.
Temple Hunter, imagine you turning up in Paris at a time like this.
What do you mean?
Great Scott, man. Everyone who has two coins to rub together is leaving.
You're still here, Max?
Actually, I haven't two coins. Add to that the fact that I'm a broken-down journalist, and you know why I'm sticking around.
Then there are two of us.
Temp, you're a sight for sore eyes. Don't think I'm not glad to see you. How's Margaret?
Swell. We're anxious to find a place to live. Margaret wants to do some painting, and I've got a story that wants to be written.
Say, how would you like to live in state for a few months?
I haven't sold the story yet.
Now listen, old man. I know of a place on Rue Loire you can rent for a song.
Yeah?
You remember hearing about Leela and Paul Perron?
No.
Well, sure you do. I've written a dozen articles about them.
Don't remember.
Well, Leela took her jewels and sables and her fabulously wealthy husband and sailed for America about a month ago. I give her credit. She could see the handwriting on the wall. They've gone for good.
So?
So their house is for rent. I saw the agent just yesterday at lunch. He said everyone was moving out of Paris. No one wanted to move in. So there you are. Wait till I get my hat. I'll take you over to meet him. In 15 minutes, you'll have the keys to number 5 Rue Loire.
Something strange about this old house, Temple. Silence is heavy and mysterious. It's as if the hours are waiting behind closed doors, ready to come out and strike doom.
Good
Margaret was speaking of the old house we rented at number 5, Rue Loire. We rented it 4 months before tragedy struck the city. 4 months before the arrogant Nazis marched down the boulevards of the most light-hearted city in the world, Paris. Margaret and I had dreamed of coming here years before when we were students at Berkeley. We had hoarded pennies to come here where I might do some writing and Margaret to paint. And now we were settled in the old-fashioned house of a rich couple who had gone to America. It was filled with treasures, library of priceless first editions, rich, heavily embroidered draperies and tapestries, oriental rugs and dark mahogany panels. I told Margaret it was the lavish display of wealth that made the place seem ominous.
Nonsense, Temple. It's not the ostentatious display that gets me down. The atmosphere of every room. So dark and foreboding.
If we could afford to have servants so that you could hear people moving around, it wouldn't seem so strange to you.
Maybe not.
Oh, I should never have allowed Max to talk me into renting it. It's too lavish for us.
You said it. We've been here 2 weeks, and I haven't put a brush to the canvas.
My typewriter's gathering dust.
And if you don't take me to some gay place for dinner right now, I shall be seized with a desire to throw one of these cloisonné vases at you.
Put on your best bib and tucker. Here we go. Remember the place Max told me about just off the Rue Washington where they sell the best spaghetti the side of heaven? So we took to hunting out cheerful places to eat. The places where there was lots of light and laughter and smart conversation. Our house, which we had rented for a song, wasn't turning out successfully. Margaret was right. There was an atmosphere over every room in the house. A feeling that persisted during all hours of the day, as well as making you sleep fitfully at night. It had me mumbling over and over to myself. Coming events cast their shadows before. Coming events cast their shadows before. We had lived at number 5 Rue Loire for about 10 days before the first weird thing occurred. It was raining that night. A steady downpour. We had a late dinner and returned by cab to our new address.
Wait, Temple. I want to put my hat under my coat before I step off in this cloudburst. Walk from the cab to the house will turn me into a drenched rat.
Well, sit here in the cab. Madame Brown must have left an umbrella in the stand. I'll bring it out.
Never mind. I'm ready for the dash. Here goes.
Got the key right here. Oh. Well, any old port in a storm.
Yes, even this museum should be welcome on a night like this.
I'll light the log in the library. That should be the most comfortable room on a night like this.
Are you sure the roof doesn't leak in this house? I can feel the rain falling on me right now.
Margie, you should be the writer in this family. Your imagination works overtime.
You know it's as damp as a tomb in here.
Yeah. Wait 5 minutes. This fire will make the room as warm as toast. Throw off your chair.
If you don't mind, I think I'll sit right in the fire.
No. Isn't this cozy?
Better.
Give me the right smile, and any minute I'll go fix you a cup of hot chocolate.
Oh, that would taste good.
At your service, m'lady.
You're in a happier mood tonight, Temple.
Oh, I feel better. You know, I think I'll be up early tomorrow morning and start my story. I'm through wasting time. I'll be back in a minute with hot chocolate. Margaret, what is it?
Look, behind those draperies at the window.
What do you think you saw? Someone picking you?
Look!
Okay. Oh, well, if there was anyone at the window, they're gone now. You would have heard you scream all over Paris.
I didn't see anyone looking in at the window. I saw a hand.
Margaret.
I did. It reached right around the draperies. I saw the fingers. They were bright red, covered with blood.
Well, what's got into you? You know, such a thing is impossible. If you saw a hand, there would be a person. There's no one behind here. You see?
I don't care what you say or how impossible it seems. I saw a hand red with blood.
I'm not going to allow you to let your imagination run away with you this way. I'm going back to the pantry and fix the hot chocolate, just as I intended to do.
Temple, don't you dare leave me. I don't want any hot chocolate. I want to get out of this house.
Oh, honey, you know that's impossible. I paid 3 months' rent here. We can't afford to move out.
You can stay. I'm leaving.
Now, wait a minute. You've allowed your nerves to get the better of you.
Temple, look at this book on the table.
Yes, I see it.
But you're not looking closely. See? There's a crimson stain on this book. Just as if the hand had touched it.
That's not a fresh stain, Martin.
What does it matter? I picked up this book before. I know the stain was never on it until tonight.
Nonsense.
Stop calling everything I say nonsense. You know that I'm observing. And I say the stain was never on this book until tonight.
All right, all right. Let's forget about it now and go to bed. If it'll calm your fears any, in the morning I'll call the police and have them look around the house. Please, Margaret, don't sit there staring wildly. Nothing is going to harm us. It's just the atmosphere of this house and your imagination. You finally let it get you down. Come on, dear. We'll get out of this room. The hours of the night inched along. I knew Margaret was not sleeping. Neither was I. Outside, the rain was still coming down. It made a mournful sound against the window panes. I was ashamed to find that I, too, was allowing my imagination to get the better of me. I could actually believe that the rain was a million fingers tapping on the panes. And then I heard another sound. Or did I? Oh, of course not. It was fancy running wild again. Or was it? Sounds like someone is tapping on the door.
What did you say, Temple?
Was I talking out loud?
Yes. I know what you said. Someone is tapping on the door.
Gosh, for a minute I did think that. But it's just the rain against the windows.
No, it isn't, Temple. Listen. There's someone tapping on the door to our room.
Who's out there? I say, who's out there? Oh, listen, this is foolish. Just darn foolishness. We know very well there's no one outside this door.
You're not sure. Neither am I. Temple!
Great Scott!
You see? Something is coming right through the door. Look at it, flying around the room. Do you see? It's a hand. A human hand. Flying around in our room!
Yes, flying in space in the bedroom of Margaret and Temple Hunter is a human hand attached to nothing. How and who will explain this strange phenomenon to the two frightened people, this weird psychomancy? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
We needn't give the hermit a hand. He seems to have one in tonight's story, but I can give you a helping hand on the job of heating your home. The most important thing is good coal, and one way to be sure of that is to place your orders well in advance and ask for Aug coal. Aug is worth waiting for, even though your dealer may not always be able to give you the usual overnight delivery service. He may not even have the exact size of Aug you've been using, but most furnaces or room heaters can use either of several sizes with complete satisfaction. So may I suggest that if your dealer doesn't happen to have the exact size of Aug coal you've been using, you take another size, it's all the same good coal of the smokeless type. No matter what the size, you get the benefit of the same extra high heat content, which can mean an adequate heating job with less coal, the same long-burning quality that can enable you to cut down on furnace tending, and the same ready response to the dampers, which can mean a more evenly heated home without waste of coal. One more suggestion. Keep your furnace or room heater clean so you don't waste coal. Incidentally, if you burn Aug coal, chances are your heating system can stay cleaner. I'll tell you at the end of the program how to find your Aug dealer. That name is spelled O-L-G-A. Now, suppose we let the hermit get back to the matter in hand.
It is the next night, and in the library, where the night before, Margaret first saw the vision of the Crimson Hand, sit three people, Temple, Margaret, and their friend the journalist, Max Harrison. Listen.
So that's the story, Max. You can see why we didn't call in the police.
Yeah. If it were anyone but you two telling me the story, I'd think you'd taken to the opium pipe.
After such an experience, it's enough to drive anyone to it.
All day I've been trying to convince myself it was an hallucination.
But it wasn't. Max has got to take you to that agent, get our money back, so we can move out of here.
It's going to be difficult to make him believe a story like this.
I don't care if it is. We're leaving here as soon as we can get back.
Sure, don't stay because of me. You come over to my place tonight. There's just one thing I want you to do. After all, I am a journalist, and if there's anything to your story, I'd like to see it repeated.
It probably never will happen again.
Temp, you're not trying to pull my leg, are you?
I don't blame you for asking that question, but the answer is no.
Well, after you saw the hand flying around in your room, what then?
It just seemed to disappear. We got up and dressed, called a cab, and went out for breakfast. We spent the rest of the day hunting for you. We haven't been near the house until we came in just now with you.
And this is the book you spoke of, Margaret?
Yes.
This is one of Paul Perron's favorite philosophers. Kind of strange he didn't take the book with him.
Max, tell me something about the couple who lived here.
Oh, they were colorful. I thought you'd remember some of the things I'd written about them, but you didn't. Lila Perron was one of the most beautiful women I've gazed upon. Soft brown hair, light brown eyes, very unusual almond shape, ivory skin, a lithe, slender body. Oh, you can't describe her. She was just different. Her mind, her thoughts. And Paul? Well, he was the type you'd cast in the cinema as the super successful businessman because of his steel gray hair and smile. But he is the intellectual artist, kind and warm, like old wine.
And very wealthy.
Yes, very wealthy and older than Leela. But I've never known a couple so much in love as these two. I was here in this house the night before they left for America, in this very room, sitting in the chair Temple is in now. Paul sat where Margaret is sitting, and Leela on a stool at his feet. And this book you speak of, Paul had it in his hands. Leela was looking up at him.
Oh, it is so hard, Paul, for you to leave the things you love.
You mean my books, my treasures?
Oui.
They are things I love, but their degree compared to you is slight.
Ah, you will love America, Paul. It is new and shining.
How do you know? You have not been there since a little girl.
Oui. But Max, he tells us. All that Paris tells us. But Paris, every day she grows more like an old woman whose body decays with the years. Soon we will see her bones. And I am afraid.
Leela, afraid? Never has she been afraid of anything.
Only growing old and being swallowed up by time. Our friends, they are gone. And time, it is heavy here now. Oh, Paul, you are so good to take me to America. Look, in my handbag are the tickets. I will sleep with them under my pillow tonight. They are tickets to freedom. Freedom from growing old in a dying Paris.
Paris. Paris. It will never die, Leela.
You hear what Max tells us. The French, they play blind man's buff with the Nazis. He does not fight him.
Paris will never die. Persons like us, we should be true to the Paris that has rocked us gently in its arms and fed our happiness.
Oh, no, Paul. You must not talk like that. Put the old book down. Let us get out of this room. It is stifling me. It is reaching out, trying to hold us here. Come, Max. Come, Paul. Let us go out and sing and be gay on our last night in Paris. Come quickly. Stop dreaming.
So we went out, and I said goodnight to them and goodbye in one of the bright cafes. They were happy and singing. Paul had forgotten that his heart was wrapped up in Paris. He was shouting, off to freedom.
Then she, too, was afraid of this room. It stifled her.
Yes, but she had seen those strange phenomena as you have.
She got away just in time, then. For there is something in this house. It was in this very room.
Let's see. A little past midnight. Well, stay till one. If nothing occurs, we'll leave and forget it all and call it a bad dream.
Suits me.
I'll sit here. Either one of you will leave me. And if you'll go into pack with me when it's time to leave.
Of course.
Max, do you feel something portentous about this house?
No. It only seems strange not to have Leland Paul here.
He was here many times when it was filled with people. Naturally, it would not affect... Naturally, it would... Margaret. What's the matter? Why did you stand up?
I'm listening. I heard it again.
Heard what?
The tapping. Listen. You hear?
Yes.
Yes.
Come on. Let's have a look around.
It didn't sound as if it might be this library door. It was distinct, but it was far away.
Well, as you can see, there's no one out here.
No.
Stand still. Let's listen again. I hear the tapping sound, but I can't locate where it comes from. But we'll keep looking.
Where are you going first?
To your room. That's where you say you saw the hand the second time. Where's the overhead lights?
Oh, here.
Nothing in here.
No.
Tapping sound seems further away.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to locate what that is if it takes all night.
We know what it is. It's a hand that does it.
Let him discover for himself, Margaret.
Let's see. This door leads to the kitchen and the servants' quarters.
Mm-hmm. I'll get the light.
Tapping is stronger out here.
It is, Max.
Temple, stay near me.
Have you ever been down in the cellar?
We've had no reason to go down there.
We're going now. Come on.
What's down here?
Hundreds of boxes of treasure that Paul has had shipped here from all over the world. And one of the finest wine cellars in the world. But it'll be locked up, waiting for the master to return. I've been down here with Paul. The last time was to get a bottle of 100-year-old port.
Wow. We've been living over something like that?
Wish I could show you. Well, you see, this is a fine hiding place for a prowler who might want to play tricks on you to get you out of the house.
Is that what you think it is, Max?
I've got a hunch.
Listen.
By Jove.
It's coming from down here.
Sure it is. It's in the cellar.
Behind this door?
Yes.
Where does the door lead?
To the wine cellar. And the door's locked tight.
Iron door, too.
Yeah.
We've got to get it open somehow.
You set it. Look, I think I can break the lock with this.
Well, we can try. Give it to me. Stand back, Margaret.
Making any headway?
Yes, I think so. I think I can break the lock.
What do you think is in there, Max?
I haven't the slightest idea. But there's something behind that door making a sound.
We should have gotten the police.
And ruin a scoop on a story? Nothing doing.
I've got it. Okay. Here goes. Max, Margaret, stay back.
What is it? What is it?
A body. The body of a man. Yes, the body of a man. Max identified it before we called the police. It was Paul Perron. We've had to piece together the story of how he got there. For up to now, Lila Perron has not been found. They're quite certain she never came to America. And Paul never went anywhere but down to the cellar where his old wines were. Someone had locked him in there and left him to die. For hours, he must have tried to make himself heard. For days, he must have tried to break open the door. His right hand was cut and covered with blood. Flesh was torn away. The bones of the wrist were broken. It seemed to be hanging to the arm by a thread. Margaret said,
"You don't think his wife... You don't think that she locked him in there to die? Max, you said they loved each other so much."
I said that. I believed it.
But she was afraid of growing old, and afraid of everything old. And Paul Perron was going down the hill, and she wanted to climb.
I'm afraid that's it, Temp.
That's what all Paris believed, too. If it hadn't been for the fact that we saw a ghostly thing, a crimson hand floating in the upper rooms of the house, why, then a few months later, the horrible crime could have been blamed to the invaders of Paris, and Lila would have gone free. But now when they find her, She will be arrested for the murder of Paul Perron, who died a horrible death in the cellar of his house and led us to his grave by a crimson hand.
Loved youth more than soul and heart, committed a crime that she thought would be buried from sight forever. She did not reckon with a ghostly hand that led three people to the grave of her victim. Turn on your lights. Turn them on.
You have just listened to the 368th story by The Hermit, made possible through the courtesy of the Carter Coal Company, producers of Alga Coal and your Alga dealer. Let him answer your questions on the fuel situation. If you are thinking of converting your furnace from your present type of fuel to coal, the Alga dealer can give you helpful advice. If you'll be patient on deliveries, it will help a lot. Everybody realizes that we're in a war. Everybody wants to do his part to win. Be sure to order Alga Coal by name. That's the only way you can be sure of getting this particular coal mined from a single seam. No other coal is quite like Alga. And when delivery is made, look for the Alga guarantee seal on the delivery ticket. It's your final assurance of getting genuine Alga coal. If you can hear this program, you should find an Alga dealer near you. Leading coal dealers in towns and cities from Manitoba to Quebec, from Ontario to the Carolinas, supply their customers with Alga. In many cities, you can locate your Alga dealer by turning to the coal section of your classified telephone directory. There you will find the dealers listed under Alga, spelled O-L-G-A. In other cities, you can obtain the name of your Alga dealer by writing to the station to which you are listening. Remember, Alga is not only one of the smokeless coals, but also was given the famous Alga dustless treatment at the mine. It's the only coal which receives this patented treatment. Alga combines the maximum number of good qualities in one coal. And remember this, too. America combines so many good qualities in one nation that every American wants to buy war bonds and stamps to the limit of his ability. Every dollar put into war bonds and stamps gives a body blow to the Axis now and a helping hand to those boys of ours who are fighting for liberty the world over, on land, at sea, and in the air.
The Hermit has more stories for you. Listen in next week for my hounds howling. I'll tell you the story of seawater. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in The Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental. This is Jack White speaking.
That's it for today's episode of The Horror. I'll be back Saturday with something from the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. In the meantime, you can find more old-time radio at relicradio.com. All the other shows are available there. Links to the forum, Facebook page, Shoutcast stream, everything Relic Radio. There's also a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thank you very much for joining me today. I'll talk to you again Saturday with another episode of The Horror. The Horror is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.